Okay. With that, I'm going to start my talk. And I'm going to be talking today. We're going through the year. Our theme is writers or thinkers that inspire us. So I chose Neville Goddard. And I'll talk about his life a little bit. But I have to tell you that I brought you here under false pretenses because I read the book I was going to talk about, and then I discovered a book called The Essential Collection of Neville Goddard, and I couldn't stop reading. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and read some, so I really won't be talking about the title of today's talk. So I'm going to start with a quote from Ernest Holmes, who is the founder of the Science of Mind movement. And he wrote many, many books or had books compiled from his talks. And this one was Discover a Richer Life. All too many people go through life without ever feeling that they're in their right place, achieving a satisfactory degree of success, or enjoying good health or companionship. Yet at the same time, they see all about them others who do not seem to have an adequate share of things. Does the universe play favorites? It may be said that the universe appears to favor some more than others, but only because an individual first comes to recognize the nature of the universe and avail herself of its potentialities. To what extent does an individual consider himself part of or outside the scheme of things? Does he feel that he is an isolated bit of life waging a futile battle against insurmountable odds in a hostile world? Or does she consider herself to be the continual beneficiary of all the good that is available? Where you find yourself today or where you hope to be tomorrow depends upon what you consider to be your relationship to that which creates and sustains all things. The discovery of a new and better place in life demands a greater concept of life and the definite application of that concept in a practical way. So Neville Goddard was born the early part of the last century in Barbados, and he was the fourth son in a family that had nine boys and one girl. So his primary two messages, if you read his books, are that we don't need others to save us, that we're the creator of our own lives, and that the Bible should be viewed as an instruction book for living and not as a literal or historically accurate account. And he has a lot of Bible references in his books. So he left Barbados in 1921. He would have been under 20 years old. And he worked at Penny's for a while and then Macy's and lost both jobs. So he decided after that he was only going to work for himself. He was never going to have a boss again. And he made that work. So he moved from department stores to dancing. He danced on stage and got married, and they had a son, traveled to Europe, and that's where he became acquainted with psychic research. So it's the beginning of his real education. Unfortunately, the Depression came at the end of the 20s, and that ended his career in dance. So he started he came back here and started studying metaphysics seriously. By 1930, he was lecturing in New York City. And by the way, his first marriage had already ended, and he met his second wife, and they had a daughter, and he began traveling across the country and giving lectures. He ended up moving to the LA area and died in 1972. And what I found really interesting is there's a lot that appears to be parallel with Ernest Holmes, who had come from a very large family, kind of grew in a rural area, but and tried to have what I call a straight job. That's what musicians call a 9-to-5er. And then he ended up moving, both of them ended up moving to the West Coast, and they studied metaphysics and philosophy extensively. There are a lot of parallels between the two. So reading Goddard was a lot like reading Ernest Holmes, just slightly different language, and I found it really refreshing. So the book I'm going to talk about is The Feeling is the Secret, and I'll intersperse a lot of his direct quotes as I go along.
Excuse me, say the title again.
The Feeling is the Secret.
Thank you.
The reason I chose this book is because he has so many, testimonials in his stories that I decided I wanted to just cut to the chase and talk about his philosophy. So The Feeling is a Secret is a very short book. It's only 20 pages, and it's pure technique. There's no testimonials or things. The main message of this book is that our consciousness creates our reality. And as soon as we begin to understand that, we begin to get the things in life that we desire. So, as we know, consciousness is personal, it's selective, and the subconscious or subjective mind is impersonal and non-selective. It's kind of like the law of attraction. If you think something and if you feel it, and it the law makes it happen. And so you can create for good, or you can create for things in your life that are not so pleasant to go through. But nonetheless, we're always creative, and we always have our conscious thoughts, and then the subconscious operates upon them. So it's important, as we know, to control our thoughts and feelings, because every idea that gets, especially those with a lot of feeling, that get impressed upon our subconscious mind, have to be accompanied by feelings. So that's the beginning of deliberately creating. And I know if you're familiar with the teachings of Abraham, they're deliberate creators. So the controlling your feelings means that you're disciplining yourself to imagine and entertain only the feelings that contribute to what you want in a happy life. You have to abandon yourself mentally to living the wish that you want fulfilled. And until then, the imagination itself, like if I just sit and imagine I'm just sitting at home reading all the time or something, it won't do anything. You really have to be transformed. The basis of your thoughts and your feelings must change, and they can't change unless you're continually generating new ideas. And this transformation begins with an intense, burning desire to be transformed. So again, it's accompanied by feelings. And this is something Holmes says over and over again, that effective prayer is accompanied by feeling. So the first step in renewing the mind is the desire. You must want and intend to be different before you can begin to change yourself. And as we know, nothing is impossible to man. Do you have a question?
Yeah, can you repeat that?
What?
The phrase you just said about...
You must want and intend to be different,
yeah,
before you can begin to change yourself.
Thank you.
Yes. So, in beginning this work, you need to impress on your subconscious mind the feeling that would be yours if you already had your wish. And you should only... And this is not something you're living 24 hours a day, but you choose selected periods of times when you are concerned with the object of your desire, and not the means of getting there. You're not putting together a plan. You're just simply, it's as though you open a door, you walk into a room, and everything you want is there. So while you're there, you're thinking of, maybe smelling if it's a restaurant or something like that, and you're going to have a conversation with somebody, you can smell the food, you can hear the noise of the dishes, you can, you can generate the feeling in yourself of how you would feel if you were in that room, and any characters that you wanted created, brought into that room with you. I'm just giving a small example. There are other ways you can do this, for instance, in your living situation or in your job. All of these allow us to actually put ourselves into a situation and live it, and that generates the feelings. So mastery of our feelings and thoughts is critical to be able to do this. I can't walk into a room and pretend I'm in a restaurant and I'm about to have a wonderful conversation with somebody if I'm thinking, last week he wasn't particularly nice to me. If I start going down that path, I begin to create again, but that's not what I want to create. So if you're not there yet, if you're not able to generate those positive feelings, the best way to get there is through the use of prayer and sleep. Because what you're using at this point in time is a relaxed state. You're not actively using your mind so much. You're more or less allowing the feelings and thoughts to flow through you. So sleep is a natural door to the subconscious. We have no freedom of choice once we're asleep. I mean, it just happens. It rolls. And your sleep is dominated by your last waking thoughts. So it's a really good idea to go to sleep with a positive frame of mind. One of the techniques that I've done with good results before I go to bed is write down the things that happened that day that I really liked. And so I know that by doing that, I attract more good things to myself. So every night before you go to sleep, you should also assume the feeling of being, having, and witnessing that which you desire. And don't go to sleep discouraged or dissatisfied. You need to steer your thoughts away from that to have your sleep time be, productive. So the concept you have of yourself before you go to sleep is like the seed being dropped into the subconscious mind. So if you fall asleep happy and satisfied, it'll compel the conditions and events to appear in your life, which will mirror in your waking life. So, prayer is the other entrance to the subconscious. Properly done, it will provide an illusion of sleep, which diminishes the impressions of the outer world and kind of pulls you inside yourself and makes your mind more receptive. He does not teach a specific form of prayer, unlike what we have in Science of Mind, but he kind of assumes that you know how to pray. So the key is that you must believe that your prayers are always answered, which we know already. And as you're praying, you should have the mindset that your prayer is already answered. So it's the art of yielding to the wish and not forcing it. So for instance, if I decide I want a promotion at work, I'm not trying to force it. What I'm trying to do is, have that feeling that I've already got the promotion. I can see myself being congratulated. As an example of that in my own life was, when I was having my 50th birthday, I was planning my 50th birthday party, and I didn't own a house at that point in time, but I just had this snapshot of myself at that party holding up a piece of paper and saying, I just bought a house, and being really excited. And I didn't think about it, but that really happened. I really walked into my party, and Connie and David were there, and so I was thrilled. I had my new house mm-hmm. in hand. So that's why it's not an effort. It kind of, you need to allow your mind to flow, and while you're making sure that your thoughts are not going down a negative path, you need to allow yourself to be open to the sensory feeling of having the object that you're praying about. And so I'm going to close here because I've kind of walked through, the prayer, the sleep, I hate to say mind control, but basically making sure that you're mindful of your thoughts and your feelings. And that's the basis for the teaching in that book. What we're going to do after the break, which we'll take soon, is we're going to go through a meditation, and John's going to lead us in actually doing that, being able to come up with something that we desire, and he's going to guide us in performing the work that Goddard recommends. So I want to close with a quote from Goddard that I loved. This very day, start your new life. Approach every experience in a new frame of mind with a new state of consciousness. Assume the noblest and best for yourself in every respect and continue therein. Make believe. Great wonders are possible. And so it is.
So it is.